Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal with my co-pilot here, my beautiful wife Krista
Di
Mercurio.
Hello.
Yes. And you've reached us here at KCNR 1460 AM. We appreciate you tuning in and listening to us chat about food and things related to food. So again, always excited to be here Wednesday for your drive time. Something you can listen to on your way home. And
I'm not looking forward to this because I'm hungry right now. So
are you hungry?
Even
okay.
More hungry.
Well, we're going to have to talk about food. And
all
I'm not really sure what I to do to help you with that. Well, you'll be starving when we get out
okay.
here. So.
All right.
Anyway, we've been talking a lot about the fresh foods because of summer and the farmer's market and things. And I happened to swing by a fruit stand on my way back. Julia's, I was coming back from Chico last week and picked up a variety of things and just things that are in season. And, you know, one of the things I noticed is that there is a variance in the same product dependent on a variety of things. Of course, when it's picked, how ripe it is or mature, but also where it's grown. And I noticed, like, that watermelon that we tried today that I'd picked up, more lighter pink color inside. That was a sweet crimson, but great flavor in the middle. But you notice that a watermelon seems to be one of those things that, you know, it's always going to be good in the middle and then kind of decreases in sweetness as it goes on.
It had more of a rind flavor the closer you got to the rind.
The closer you got to the rind. Exactly. So it wasn't quite as sweet, but it was delicious.
I'm finding I'm getting spoiled because this had seeds in it, and I'm getting to the point that I don't want to deal with the seeds anymore.
Spitting watermelon seeds is really something that, you know, as a kid you grew up
with. Yeah, we did.
I do not, and I'm thinking about this now since you brought it up. I do not remember a time when I was a kid that they had watermelons that did not have seeds.
No, it's more of a something that they've created lately.
Yeah, we should have Googled that. Like, when did seedless watermelon, you know, come out? Well, hey, if you want to Google it and give us a call, you can do that. Again, the number down here, 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And you can also send a question to our podcast, CookingLikeAPro.net. Again, CookingLikeAPro.net. But yes, I thought the watermelon was interesting. Now, I'm going to throw something out at you because, again, me and my wife have an age difference. It's not gigantic, but it's but I did ask her earlier. I said, "Have you ever had a tomato and mayonnaise sandwich?" Because I remember those white bread. Wonder Bread, I think that was the only bread they had. To be honest, I don't even know if they had wheat bread back then. I'm talking about the 60s.
Yeah,
okay. But I remember just the Wonder Bread, white bread with the mayonnaise, and just a big thick slice of fresh tomato on it. And it was like the beginning of a BLT.
You put mayonnaise on it.
Tomato and mayonnaise sandwich.
So you're missing the L and the T.
We're missing the L and the T, but we didn't have it, you know. I mean, this was just something that we ate. And I've done some work over the last number of years in independent living facilities where we have an older clientele. And I have had people request that, just mayonnaise and tomato or sometimes just mayonnaise and cheese. And I guess it was out of necessity or whatever was in the cupboard, but you know.
Could be. Well, if we would just take a big old slab of tomato and just put a real light seasoned salt on it, you know, salt and pepper and garlic,
yeah.
And I mean, just nothing else but the tomato and a little bit of a salt mixture.
But bacon makes things better. Bacon actually makes life better.
Yes, it does.
You know, I mean, it just does. It can be used in so many different ways. And you know, but when you're talking about getting something that's sweet like that tomato, and then you get something salty
like the bacon,
yeah, and then something crisp like the lettuce. That's, and you know, throw a piece of cheese on there, and you kind of got all the food groups.
Well,
right?
And also
the only thing you're missing is dairy, and
the acid of the tomato balances the creaminess, the fattiness of the bacon. So it's just a perfect pairing.
Yeah, well, I want to throw a fried egg on top of that too.
Oh, make it an ultimate sandwich.
Especially the eggs that we get from our chickens. You know, I'm just so proud of them. This is beautiful eggs, folks. The yolk is twice the size of the white. And it's just this amazing, amazing flavor that you get. So,
well, Happy Chickens come from California.
Highly recommend it. Happy Chickens. Happy Chickens. Well, they got, you know, condos now that they've changed the law on that. But we also had a cantaloupe, and I was surprised about that because the cantaloupe was an ambrosia. And last week we had a cantaloupe, which was delicious. I think you said it tastes like cotton candy or something.
Yeah.
But, other than that, I mean, this one just wasn't there. You know, it wasn't as a sweet, which kind of surprised me on that. So as we're talking about produce here, we have a phone call. We have a John on line two. John, welcome to the show. Appreciate you calling in.
Hey, Chef Cal and Krista. I hate to interrupt your waxing eloquently about watermelon and tomatoes, but I have a question for you.
Sure.
Okay. I want to grill some boneless pork chops, and I want the nice grill marks on both sides, but I don't want it to turn into a hockey puck. Is there any secret reason that we can't have moist centers of pork chops that are grilled?
Yes, you can. There is a reason that you can't, and that's overcooking. But I'll tell you, John, this is something that I've always done when it comes to char-grilled items. So you're talking about a char-grill like a barbecue, correct?
Gas barbecue outside. I just
perfect.
Want those nice grill marks, crunchy on the outside, but moist in the center.
Yeah.
Well, and when I do it, it ends up being a hockey puck.
Yeah, well, the key is always four turns. Right? It's always four turns. You put it on there. First off, it's got your season or your rub or your marinade. If you want good grill marks, you want to scrape that grill off with any of the food particles that were on there from the last time you cooked. And then you want to go ahead and wipe it after that with paper towel or, you know, a kitchen towel if your wife's not looking. And then you get the soot off of it. And then you spray it with pan coating and, it's just fire hot. Go straight on there. And you want to take it. And when you turn it, I like to look at my two back corners of my griddle. On the grill, you have a left side and a right side. And when I put that meat on there, in this case pork, I aim it towards one side. And then I flip it, aiming towards the same side. And then the third flip and the fourth flips are all to the back right corner. So let's say this, you know, it could be a half inch thick, it could be 2 inches thick. So the timing is going to be a little bit different. But you want each turn to be the same. So if you had a standard pork chop, let's say an inch and a quarter thick, I would go, you know, 3 to 4 inches right back corner, 3 to 4 inches left back corner on the opposite side, and then the last 3 to 4 minutes, heading right, and then the fourth flip would be 3 or 4 minutes. And then just take a temperature gauge, and you want your pork, a lot of people overcook pork too because, you know, they figure, oh, it's got to be well done, it's got to be 160. Well, yes, 160 is what you want, but it's going to continue to cook. Right, John, when you take it off of there, what you want to do is make sure that you pull it when the internal temperature is somewhere around 154, 155, because it's going to keep climbing. If you pull it at 160 and it keeps climbing until it's 165, that's when you're going to get your dry hockey puck.
Now, do you
exhaust
that?
Okay, that's how I've been getting it. So no trichinosis involved if you take it off early.
Yeah, exactly. No, if you have a direct response thermometer and you point that into the very center of the meat and get that temperature somewhere in the low 150s, knowing that because a barbecue is very, you know, it's a type of heat that's going to be, you know, pretty abrupt, right? So it is going to be high temperature. You take it off there. It's going to continue to cook, something we use the term carryover cooking. And again, you want it to be 160 when you eat it, not 160 when you pull it, and 165, 170. Because, you know, a juice is fat is flavor. So if you're going to eat protein, yep, keep it in there. All right.
Sounds good. Okay, I'll get the applesauce and onions ready and try that. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Sounds great, John. Appreciate your call.
Bye.
In. All right. You know, that's one of the things that people generally would do is overcook in their food. And I appreciate John calling in so we can clarify that. But a direct response thermometer, and you want the tip of that into the center of the protein, and then you just read it off from there. I mean, you want medium rare. You want rare? 125. You want medium rare? 132. You want, you know, medium, get up to, you know, 138 to 140, and then medium well, somewhere around the 150 mark, and then, of course, well done at 160. So, you know, get it yourself.
I think we need to make a cheat sheet on that.
No. Well, we could do that, but, you know, and I always use the baseball touch. You know, now obviously we can't do that here because you can't see, but you just kind of hold a baseball in your hand and clutch it, and you can use that to kind of tell when it's ready. So anyway, John, we appreciate the call. We're going to be coming back in a minute. We're here at Cooking Like a Pro. Back in just a moment.
Yummy, yummy. Yummy, 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 yummy fruit salad. Let's make some fruit salad today. It's fun to do. The healthy way. Take all the fruit that you want to eat. It's going to be a fruit salad treat.
The first step.
Peel your bananas.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson. And find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Hiya everybody, RC with Tobacco and Brew, and this month's Cigar of the Humidor, El Pulpo by AJ Fernandez. Receiving a 94 rating, El Pulpo is outstanding, balanced, layered, bold, are just a few words used to describe the powerful character of such a cigar from the factory of AJ Fernandez. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
Flophouse. I'm spending my days on the street. I'm looking for work and I find none. I wish I had something to eat. Soup, soup, they give me a bowl of soup. Soup, soup, they give me a bowl of soup.
You know, I'm kind of, welcome back. Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. This is Chef Cal with my wife, Krista DiMercurio. And I know I came across that song, and it just kind of reminded me of maybe the recession. Not that I was there, but, you know, when they had the soup lines and mm-hmm. they talk about those things historically in our past. But we did want to talk about some soup because soup isn't overly popular. The big, thick, chili-type things really aren't the kind of thing when it's triple digits that you really want to dig into, but there are just such a variety. We had talked about chilled soups, you know, a number of weeks ago, but soups are really fairly simple. There's really only five categories. And again, I went through a French apprenticeship. So the five categories of soup, they taught us were thick soups, like a bisque. If you see the word bisque, bisque is normally seafood. So you see a thick soup would be like lobster bisque, crab bisque, those kind of things. Cream soups, like cream of vegetable, cream of asparagus, cream of broccoli, cream of cauliflower, cream of carrot, cream of everything. You know, that carrot soup that we used to make, that cream of carrot and ginger,
mm-hmm.
That was a nice touch.
With like a coconut cream in
it? Well, you can go that direction and, you know, kind of an Asian thing. But it's basically just cooking the vegetables down, tightening it up with your roux, your flour and butter mixed together, and then just whatever vegetable you want. And it's a great utilizing like the asparagus we had last night.
Yeah.
And I was talking to our son Isaac, and it's like, well, what are we going to do with that? I said, well, you can boil that down, and we'll get asparagus broth, and then we can use that broth as a base instead of just starting off with straight water. So, you know, you got more flavor.
So a soup is based on water.
It's based on liquid, yeah. And generally, that's good. That's going to be a water. You know, I mean, because you're going to have water even in a cream soup that's going to be cream. It's not going to be all cream. But thick soup, cream soup, and then next would be broth. So things like, beef barley, you got your chicken noodle falls into that category. Anything that's more of a liquid broth-based. And then legumes. So anything that's a bean soup. Again,
is chili considered a soup?
Yeah, well, I think if it's thick, then I think you know you're looking at it as an entree. If it's thinned down a little bit, then perhaps. But mostly, when we think about legumes, we think about split pea soup.
Mm-hmm.
We think about white bean and ham, you know, with some chopped red peppers in it, something like that. And then the last one is specialty soups, the last category. And I've always broken the category of soup, and I taught soup for 15 years. At a local college here, soup making. But yeah, I usually break that specialty soups into two categories, meaning national soups or even international soups. So we have a variety of those. We have miso, which of course is Japanese. We have borscht. It's a bright beet soup, which is Russian. French onion. That's good, a French soup. But also the French have a soup that's called a bouillabaisse. That we made. And the bouillabaisse is really the French version of cioppino, which for us, cioppino, of course, is Italian, as Italians. But it's the same thing, except if it's French, the bouillabaisse ingredients are pretty much similar. And then Italian?
Minestrone.
Minestrone, yeah. And then pho. Can they even hear that on the radio? Pho? You know, some people say pho. You know, it's a Vietnamese soup that is just really just a broth with noodles and a variety of ingredients, but you can do. I mean, it's top ramen. Okay, you're kind of looking at top ramen with a little more liquid.
Okay, so my favorite Asian soup is egg drop soup.
You do a good job on egg drop. In fact, you do a better job than me. There's the trick. What's your trick?
The trick to making an egg drop soup is to beat up your egg, and then you go to your broth. It's really simple. So you make a chicken broth. You flavor it with ginger and soy mm-hmm. sauce, and sometimes they even add white corn to it. But you get an agitation going. You get the water, the broth spinning,
okay.
And then you slowly stream in the beaten egg, and that's how you get that egg drop soup that you get at the Chinese mm-hmm. restaurant.
Now do you just dump it in there while it's spinning, or do you...
You pour it in, just like you would do an emulsion yeah. in like a salad dressing where you're slowly pouring in the oil.
Okay, so you're not like running it through a sieve or anything like that, or a colander, because some of the things that I've seen, maybe that's why mine doesn't turn out. Yeah. I just let her make it.
Yeah, I just beat it up real quick and then just pour it in as the broth is spinning.
Mm-hmm. And then regional soups, of course, we have a Manhattan clam chowder, which I really like, but you don't see it. It's an East Coast clam chowder.
I don't think I've ever had it.
Yeah, it's a red clam chowder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Boston clam chowder, which of course is creamed. And the key to the making these chowders with clams is that the clams are already cooked. They're in a can. They don't need to be cooked. They're already dead. You don't need to kill them again.
You just need to heat them up a little bit.
Don't overheat them. You're going to be chewing,
rubber.
Clam flavored bubblegum.
Yeah.
And we don't want that. But other things, gumbo from the South, in Louisiana. Tortilla soup, of course, or pozole, which would be Mexican. The pozole I like because it's really the only item that I really use hominy in. You know, hominy, of course, is white corn that's been dehydrated and then rehydrated. Once it's hydrated, the shells are moved. So it's got a ton of fiber. It's got great flavor. It's a little bit unique. Generally, it's going to be canned. And remember, with that canned hominy, it's already cooked. It's already cooked in the can. You know, so it's just dried corn. It's also gluten-free. So, you know, it's something to look at when you're looking for something that's gluten-free. But a variety of things. But I think one of the things that I like the most about soup is it can be total utilization of ingredients, because what you're looking for is, you know, you've got, you know, some chicken that's left over from that pulled chicken. You've got some, you know, mushrooms left over. You've got some carrots and onions and celery and things. So, you know, it's pretty easy just to throw together a soup and just get it simmering on the back. You want to add your aromatics, again, would be your vegetables and also your seasonings, whatever protein you have laying around. There's very little you can't make out of soup. And actually, I have a soup that was very popular, and this was sometime around February of, you know, decades ago. I was at my restaurant, so it's well after Thanksgiving, and I look in the freezer, and there's like five, you know, I always look in the freezer. What's left over? I got to make soup. Our restaurant, we gave soup and salad for every guest that came in. So, and I seen these five pumpkin pies. So I made a poultry stock. I dumped these pumpkin pies whole, just thawed them out, dumped them in the pot. The crust actually thickened it up. I used a stick blender, and I just a warm pumpkin pie, serve it with a little dollop of fresh cream on top and a little sprinkle of nutmeg. And people loved that.
I was just
using up leftovers. Okay, trying to be creative because, you know, I can figure out what a soup needs. But again, you've seen those leftovers and you can utilize those, and soup is a great way to do it. And, you know, if you have a little bit of chicken or you have a little bit of something left, just wrap it up and freeze it. You know, and then when you get ready to make soup, pull out these ingredients and throw them together in a pot and experiment. You know, do I want to make a broth soup? Do I want to make a cream soup? Do I want to make a seafood soup? And then just kind of fill those categories in, because the methods are all very similar, but you get a chance to use up whatever happens to be laying around.
So how far ahead do you need to make soup? So you hear a lot of restaurant menus have same-day soups, and I find that soup tastes way better the next day after the flavors have had time to meld and open up.
And exactly. And that's a good point, because a lot of times, well, there are certain things that just get better with time. You know, red wine, of course, but we're talking about, you know, spaghetti sauce tastes better the next day. Chili tastes better the next day. And it's just had use the perfect term. It's had that opportunity for those flavors to meld together, to blend together. So having a soup, does need to be cooked on high. You don't need to boil the heck out of it. Certain vegetables will start to get bitter, especially celery when it's cooked too long, asparagus, broccoli, thing, you know, sulfuric vegetables. Definitely are going to get that sulfur flavor that you really don't want.
So make your soup, enjoy it that first night, cool it down rapidly if you can.
Cool it down rapidly. You don't want to
enjoy maybe another next day, and then freeze the rest and keep it for down the road.
Yeah, you know, you throw a handful of ice cubes in it when you're done with dinner. And then, because you don't want to put something hot in your fridge, that's just going to raise the temperature of your fridge, which has everything else in it. But certain things that you want to have a heavy bottom pot. You really need a pot that's really heavy on the bottom. A stick blender, is a good thing to have, because that's going to puree it.
Smooth it out.
Makes it a little bit easier. And then a really good whisk. So you don't need a whole lot of things. The heavy bottom pot is important, especially if you want to sweat things, allow them to kind of, you know, saute at a low temperature just to get those flavors in there. And you throw in your mirepoix and your bouquet garni, which would be your seasonings and your vegetables. And then just allow those chance to develop that flavor, and then start adding whatever it is you got. You got some leftover beef, some leftover fish, and just kind of go from there.
Okay, I got a quick question for you. The first time you ever served me soup in your restaurant, you had like croutons on top of it.
Yeah.
I have never, other than having the little crackers on a clam chowder, had croutons on top of my
oyster
soup.
Oyster crackers. You know, it's nice to have a textural component. You know, if I'm going to eat minestrone, I want some Parmesan cheese on there, but I want some croutons. So I want a textural component that's going to give it that extra texture, also give it that extra flavor. So we appreciate that. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour, Cooking Like a Pro. You're here with Chef Cal and Krista on KCNR, 1460 AM.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Success starts with a single step. At Shasta College, we can help you take that next step forward towards a new career or transfer to a four-year university with your first 2 years done. We have 75 years of experience helping students just like you build their future and realize their dreams. So, what do you want for your future? Success starts at Shasta College. Enroll today. Fall semesters begin August 19th. Enroll at shastacollege.edu.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Crustaceans and mollusks, cephalopods and fish, are different types of seafood that make a tasty dish. Mollusks such as scallops and oysters contain zinc, an element that keeps your skin healthy and pink.
There you go. You know, there are. Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro.
You have been searching out songs today.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but we didn't have the internet back then, so now you can just put, you know, fish song and, you know,
and YouTube pops up
what comes up. But you know, I think that I love that song choice because it talks about the healthiness of seafood. And again, I start off with this because I've heard so many people say it that are, I don't like fish, I can't stand fish. I always ask them why, and they say, because it's fishy. And it's not supposed to be fishy, folks. If your fish is fishy, there's something wrong with the fish. Again, fish should be, fresh fish should have kind of an oceanic kind of a flavor. It should have just a beautiful, sometimes mineral kind of a flavor, especially if you get into shellfish like, you know, scallops and oysters. But I'll tell you, it's not supposed to be fishy.
That's why I have you cook it, because I had so many episodes of food poisoning growing up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We took the Boy Scouts, fly fishing. A few weeks ago, and they all caught fish, and a couple of them had never had it before, and we cleaned it. They had to clean it, fillet it, and we barbecued it, and they ate every last morsel. But it was fresh. It was right out of the water. It was treated well. It was cooked well. And it was, you know, very lightly seasoned. I mean, you want to taste the trout. Fish is very mild. So it's almost like taking abalone and putting tartar sauce on it. I mean, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't cover it plus $85 a pound. But, you really wouldn't, you don't want to mask the flavor. Seafood's expensive, you know.
Unless you're really getting fish sticks, and then you're pretty much paying for breading with a little stream of fish inside of it.
Well, it's probably fish, you know, in there somewhere. I don't know what.
Maybe that's why kids don't like fish sticks anymore.
Dehydrated cod. I'm not sure. Again, I am a lover of fish and chips. So you get a nice batter, whether it's a beer batter or something that's more Japanese, like a tempura batter. Tempura batter, again, very simply, is just flour and soda water. It comes with a nice batter. You color it if you want. Some of the seafood that I like to talk about is separating what we call shellfish. So shellfish, we separate into two categories. One's crustacean, and that's multi-segmented. So that's where you get your crab and your shrimp and your lobster. And then the second shellfish would be mollusk. And a mollusk is either one or two shells. So again, scallops, oysters fall into that category, clams fall in that category. And one of the things I like to do when we talk about crustaceans and shrimp is that shrimp is still one of the very few crustaceans or seafood items that are fairly reasonable. You can do a nice shrimp dish, get some really nice shrimp, and as long as you don't overcook it, and make a really nice dinner, scampi. You know, one of the things that we did a lot of is a French dish called scampi provençal. Scampi provençal is just sautéed scampi. You just get your oil hot, throw in your garlic, start your shrimp, get shrimp halfway cooked, add your mushrooms, green onions, a little Dijon mustard, hit it with some white wine, a little tomato, and I mean, it's just a combination.
And you're making me hungry.
It's a French combination that works. And then if you want to go to a mollusk, one of the things that I really enjoy is steamed clams. I get a Manila clam. There's a variety of different types of clams, of course, but a Manila clam is a good, meaty, medium clam. So it's got good meat, and it's medium-sized. You just want to steam it, a little bit of water in a pan, throw it in there, bring the water to a boil, put a lid on it, let it steam, take them out, and I like to toss them into what I call a clam nectar. So it's like a clam broth. You can use a clam base, or just clam juice, which you can get. I add saute some garlic, some fresh tarragon, add your clam juice, and then thicken it up. And you want this to be translucent because you want to see the clams. So we're going to thicken that up with just a little bit of cornstarch and water. And it should steam your clams, throw them over. And all you need then is some Chardonnay, some butter, and grandma. My grandma, we used to do clam feeds all the time with grandma. It was a lot of fun. That was something that I really enjoyed. But clams are great.
So I've got an idea here that I've heard of, and I haven't had it, is mock abalone.
Mock abalone, yeah, you know, and it's actually the recipe, it can become very close to tasting similar to abalone.
So it's really chicken, right?
Yeah, you take
that's
chicken
been in clam juice.
Yeah, but what you want to do is you want to take the chicken broth and you want to use a mallet on both sides and you want to break it up well. And then usually I'll go 3 days in clam juice, flip it once a day, and then just take it out, lightly flour it, saute it, and if your eyes were closed, you'd think you'd have abalone. It's very, very close.
Do you grill it? Do you
pan sear? Yeah, okay. Saute it, flip it over, give just a touch of wine, and from there you can, you know, if it's poultry, so, you know, you can add different things. If you want to go piccata, you know, like the white wine with the cream and the capers and the shallots in it. But a variety of things you can use seafood. It's very versatile. You want to use a risotto. Risotto is always a good one. A seafood risotto, very popular that I've done in my restaurants. And just so you know, if you travel to Italy, you cannot get seafood risotto there for one person. They only cook it for two. They do it from scratch, and you can only get it for two people. I tried. I begged. I could not get when I was there. I had to find someone that would eat with me so they would make a seafood risotto. Because, you know, risotto, of course, is the arborio rice, the short fat rice that it just takes a while to cook. When you're cooking it, you have to continue to add stock to it, and it cooks very slowly. So,
okay, I've got a shrimp question for you.
Okay, sure.
Okay, there's bay shrimp.
Yes.
There's prawns. There's scampi. What are these different types of shrimp? And then something about a U rating?
Yeah. What it is it always goes by pound. How many are in a pound? So if you take salad shrimp, or what we call bay shrimp, it can be anywhere between 250 to 300 pieces per pound. It's real small. But then you start getting shrimp that's larger, and it goes by how many shrimps are in a pound. So there's 16 ounces in a pound. So a 16 shrimp is going to be 16 pieces in a pound. 25 to 30 will be 25 to 30 in a pound, so about half the size. And you can go up to a 40 to 45, or you can go like a U10, which means that there's under 10. The U stands for under.
Oh.
So U16 or U10 would be under 16 in a pound, which would be just under an ounce, or right, just about an ounce, maybe even a little bit more. Then a U10, and a U10 shrimp would really be something. When I get U10s, it's something that I'm going to stuff. I'm going to devein it, cut it, shell it, devein it, flatten it out, put a piece of plastic on it with the cut side up. And I'm just going to lightly pound that out and get it to the point where it's maybe, I don't know, size of a wallet or something, maybe by, 2 by 3 inches. Then I might put some nice fresh crab meat in there and then roll it up. So then I might even bread it at that point, flour, egg, panko, and just do a quick fry on it. But it's just such a larger shrimp.
So if you can't afford lobster, could you use one of those U10s as kind of a something else you could buy that's a little more inexpensive?
And cook lobster? Like a lobster. You can roast it. You're going to want to use some clarified butter on it. That's going to, do a good job. Lobster, of course, poached in clarified butter is one of the most succulent things. I'm never going to end up on death row and be able to, say, hey, here's my last meal, but if I get the last meal thing, I think butter poached lobster is going to be there. I've had that down at the French Laundry a couple of times, and we've made it. I had it on the menu at one of my restaurants. It's just succulent. You take lobster and you just poach it like 134 degrees, and it takes about 7-8 minutes, and it's almost crunchy. I mean, it's that, especially if you're going to go fresh, then and something like that, then you want to go from the East Coast. That's fine. But when you order lobster, you want lobster from an area where the water's cold. So just ask your monger when you're sitting there at the counter, say, where did this lobster come from? If it came from Mexico, it's not cold water. The water's not cold there.
You want Maine lobster, right?
Maine lobster for fresh, but cold water is Australian.
Okay.
Australia, New Zealand. Even Alaskan. So you want it to come from water that's the colder, the better. So I always got rock lobster from Australia. The best flavor, the best texture. A couple other things, paella. We've done that a couple times. We did that with our friend Julie over on the coast the last time we were over there. And it's just, you want that crisp rice on the bottom, but you take your paella pan and you cook off your chicken and you cook off your sausage and you cook off your seafood and then you remove these. You cook off your vegetables, remove these, cook in your, and you're doing all this in the same pan. So you got all that flavor. Then you're throwing your rice in there. And then you're going to cook that rice. Do it like you do risotto. Continue to add stock until it gets that nice crust on the bottom. And the rice is cooked all the way through. Throw all your proteins that you cooked and your vegetables back on top. Sometimes I'll drizzle that with a little aioli. But, I mean, that's one pot cooking. That's like you invite people over and you want to just say, hey, I want to do some. We want to do something fun.
And what's unique about a paella pan? What makes it so conducive to this particular type of cooking?
It's got a heavy bottom. It's got handles on the side, and it's just one pot. It's kind of like, imagine if you took a wok and just flattened it. Yeah, flattened it down, and you'd have a great dish there. But even cedar, wood, you can just be so creative. We did the cedar plank salmon. We just take the plank, oil it, and you always want to use an untreated cedar. So make sure you get untreated cedar. You cook the wood until that oil comes out, and you set a piece of fish on there. We used to do salmon or halibut, and then just bake it right on the wood in your oven. It's not going to catch on fire.
And no parchment, anything like that,
nope,
just straight on the wood.
Well, you can put it in parchment, you can put it in a paper bag, but I would just generally put it right on there, and it's just amazing flavor. And something about that cedar flavor, the garlic, the shallots, Another thing we've mentioned also is you want to encase it with flavor. So one of the things you do is an aioli, flavored mayonnaise. Mayonnaise doesn't sound like you'd go with fish, but when you coat it, it locks that flavor in, and the mayonnaise completely changes texture and flavor.
Okay, you know. So what's the difference between aioli and tartar sauce?
A tartar sauce is going to have dill pickles in it, and an aioli can have any variety of things like capers, garlic, shallots, and stuff. So a little bit different. So, all right. So, but anyway, cooking like a pro. We're going to take our last break here. We appreciate you listening here. KCNR, 1460 Radio, back in a moment.
Mollusks such as scallops and oysters contain zinc, an element that keeps your skin healthy and pink. Crustaceans and mollusks, cephalopods and fish, are different types of seafood that make a tasty dish.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
Reading, take an inflation vacation with Black Bear Diner's 7 new weekday dinner deals, starting at just $9.99. Tasty fish tacos, creamy fettuccine carbonara, steak and fries, a crispy chicken dinner, beef stroganoff, and more. Serve Monday through Friday after 4 p.m. Escape inflation's grip on your wallet and set the table tonight with good old-fashioned family food at your friendly Black Bear Diner in Reading on Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
Dinosaurs have taken over Turtle Bay Museum with Expedition Dinosaur, Rise of the Mammals. Open now through September 2nd, featuring large-scale animatronics and life-size models of dinosaurs, hands-on activities, and more. Journey back in time and explore the end of dinosaur reign in this highly interactive and educational exhibition from Stage 9 Exhibits. Expedition Dinosaur, Rise of the Mammals, on display now at Turtle Bay Museum. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Do you or someone you love struggle with PTSD, anxiety, depression, insomnia, OCD, alcoholism, substance abuse disorder, autism, ADHD, brain fog, or traumatic brain injury? At Shasta Meadows Wellness Center, Dr. Taggart and his team offer safe, proven, and effective care, even for those resistant to typical medicine. Learn more about Shasta Meadows Wellness Center. They have IV ketamine or at-home oral ketamine. Ask about the state-of-the-art EEG guided TMS therapy. This customized, safe, no side effect option is effective on a wide range of difficult to treat conditions. Visit us today at ShastaMeadowsWellness.com. Don't just get by, get well.
Call to make an appointment for a free consultation. 530-444-8304. 530-444-8304. Shasta Meadows Wellness Center in Reading.
Wine Country by Hannah Ellis. I love the Wine Country. I've been very blessed in my life to have been able to be a big part of it, living down there and running a winery for a couple of years. And I proposed my beautiful wife, Krista, about 20 years ago.
Birthday, anniversary.
I think it was yesterday, huh? Just like it was yesterday. Oh, you know, speaking of family stuff, I gotta do a shout out to my son, my oldest son's birthday today. Happy birthday, CJ.
Happy birthday, CJ.
Cal Jr., yes. Happy birthday to you. We don't need to say how old he is. but anyway, just a wonderful, wonderful young man. So speaking of Wine Country, you know, we've been talking about different varietals. Again, the varietal is that type of wine, a Cabernet, a Chardonnay. We've talked about a few different ones, and I wanted to talk about Sauvignon Blanc. Because it's a wine that you just... It's out there, but you don't see it get a lot of attention. And depending on what you're eating, it's a fantastic wine to match with food.
I think it's more specific for pairing, it seems
yeah.
like.
Well, the acid that it has, it's going to cut through things, especially creamy things like, you know, cheese dish. It's a fantastic match with goat cheese.
Well, it's not sweet. It's more of a probably a refreshing type wine.
Yeah, well, refreshing, but in the acid. And I mentioned goat cheese. I want to just throw a shout out to the Chev company down. They're down outside in Cottonwood. They make a Chev. I took a couple of trips. I took my students down there to do a kind of a tour. So they do it's right out Bowman Road out there by the school I went to. I went to that school. What was that school?
Evergreen.
Yeah, yeah, Evergreen. Right out that way. But anyway, yeah, just they make a wonderful, wonderful Chev. They're not real acidic like a lot of the ones are. So, Heidi, I looked that one up, folks. But, yeah, you know, herbaceousness, grassiness, it's going to have, you know, those herbaceous qualities. You can pick up any number of herbs in it. So it tells you right away that whatever you're going to cook, you know, generally fish or poultry would go with the white wine, or even pasta. But you throw all the herbs you want in it, and it's just going to almost always be a really nice match.
Is it more of a French wine? Is it South America?
Well, the grape originally did come from France from what I understand it. The actual word Sauvignon comes from a French word that means wild. So it's like wild grapes, wild vines, things that were growing. Also, we talk about laying things down, you know, letting them sit for a while. Sauvignon Blanc does not fall into that category. If you're going to drink a Sauv Blanc, you want to drink it within a couple of years. That's when it's going to be its best. It's kind of like beer is made, you know, beer is cooked and made to drink right away. Some wines are made to drink quickly, and some are made to lay down, and they get better as they sit there because of the generally it's going to be the tannins that allow that longevity.
Now, would this be something to be done with in a stainless steel instead of oak?
Yeah, Sauvignon Blancs will see some oak, not as much as a Chardonnay might, but you're right. Mostly stainless steel. We've been down there and seen the big stainless steel vats that they use that for, but it's going to be low tannin, going to normally be drier. You can maybe get one with a little bit of fruit, like maybe white peaches, those kind of flavors that you might get out of it. But you know, maybe apple or green apple is something that you can get out of a dry white wine as well.
So this probably be best in a salad course, an appetizer course.
Well, you know, if you get a even like a nice salad with blue cheese and then maybe some pecans, so you're getting, you know, that combination of the creaminess and the highest acidic wine, and then you're getting a little bit of out of the pecans, you get kind of like an earthiness. So yeah, you know, just again, look at the back of the bottle, and in this day and age, we have cell phones. Go online and just see what they have. You know, see what the winemaker says, and then try to replicate that. But when you go through, do the same thing. You know, pour it in your glass. Does not need to breathe because it hasn't been in the bottle long. But you want to swirl it. And why are we swirling it?
We're looking at the legs.
God, yep, that's what the sommeliers do. They're looking at the legs. They actually have that little friend of mine who was the chef of the San Francisco 49ers for a long time, my buddy Sal Capania. He had a taste event, which it's you have a rope around you, around your neck, and you have this little small shiny kind of is multi-indented, and you pour the wine in there so you can see the clarity of it.
Oh, that's what that little silver mini pan is for?
I've seen it.
I've got
one around the house there somewhere. But I've got a lot of things. But it's called Tastevin, and they'll do that to check the wine out so the sommelier can make sure that those characteristics are where they need. But then you want to smell it. You don't want to just drink it. Get that nose. Get the aroma. Enjoy it. Enjoy your wine. Swirl it. Look at it. Notice the legs, the viscosity or the body of it. Get the aroma, you know, get those esters going in your nose. And then when you taste it, that first taste, again, draw some air over that, over your tongue. Is that, you know, well, my mouth's dry. I don't think I can do it right now. But,
it's
kind of
like slurping soup. We talked about soup earlier. It's kind of that slurping.
It's a slurping sound. Yeah. Yes. But again, chicken, goat cheese, cucumber and dill would work great for this. You know, if you wanted to do something like a tzatziki, you know, with a cucumber sauce and do it with some pita bread and some other things. You know, even hummus, it would even cut through.
Would you ever deglaze with Sauvignon Blanc?
I would. What I deglaze with, meaning what I add to the pan to get all those particles back into the final dish, whatever I deglaze with is what I'm going to drink with it. So that's a great way to make it a similar match instead of a contrast, a similar match by taking, you know, if I'm doing a halibut dish and I hit it with some Chardonnay, then that Chardonnay is what I'm going to drink. If I'm doing a veal dish and I hit it with a little bit of, you know, Pinot Noir, that's what I'm going to drink with it. I'm barbecuing a beef dish, you know, and I'm doing a Cabernet mushrooms with it, then I'm going to drink that same Cabernet with it.
How about scallops with this deglaze, well? Making scallops?
Scallops is, I almost always go to Chardonnay because scallops are just already so plump and juicy and they already have a kind of a creamy, you know, you don't overcook them. They have that creamy component
kind of sweet
to
and
them.
Creamy.
Yeah. And Chardonnay has that same cream, especially if it's been, you know, had some lactose, introduced into the process. If there's been a lactate introduced where it gets that dairy component. The Sauvignon Blanc, it's going to cut through the dairy. It's going to kind of clean your tongue, some of the things. Again, white wine. I always just figure 50 degrees for white wine. So if your refrigerator, it should be 40, 41, 39, somewhere in there. Let it sit out. The longer you let it sit, the more flavors are going to come out in it.
But not too far.
Well, not until it gets warm. You want to drink it between 50 degrees, give or take 5 degrees. So no cooler than 45, no warmer than 55. Very seldom will you go over that. Maybe with a really nice Chardonnay, you might want to get up to 60. But for the most part, you want to keep around 50 degrees, give or take 5.
And should you pour it into a room temperature glass or into a chill glass from the fridge?
I generally, you know, it's going to depend if it's a hot day and, you know, it's going to, you know, maybe need a little help to stay cool. Yeah, then you can go with a chill glass. We keep our glasses in a wine refrigerator, which runs around 54. I think we have to keep it at 54. Mm-hmm. That's where we keep our wines at. So, you know, when they come out, they're ready to go. But you definitely don't want to drink wines at refrigerator temperature because they're just too closed in. You're not going to get all the flavor. You're just kind of slurping it down. Now, there are wines that you might do that with. I should correct myself because if you're drinking what we call Kool-Aid, which falls into that white Zinfandel, comes in a box kind of a thing.
The wild vines that I love.
Yeah, yeah. But there's nothing wrong with that, but you're drinking it for refreshment.
Yes.
You're not drinking it and saying, wow, you know, I mean, that's the kind of wine that you'll take and make a sangria out of it, or you'll, you know, do something that's, maybe you'll chill it. Maybe you'll do a sangria float and put some ice cream on it. I don't know. But anyway.
Okay. What about people that put ice in their wine?
People that put ice in their wine, there's a special place for them. To each his own. You know, we always say drink what you like. And if you want ice in your wine, to make it a little cooler, you know, we're not talking about ice vine, which is an actual varietal that comes from allowing wine to get very cold, being
almost
harvested
frozen
and late in the season, maybe into September, even into October. Germany, of course, is where you get the best ice vines in the world, and they're absolutely delicious, but they're like dessert by themselves. You can pair them with something, but they're dessert.
I love it.
Yep.
I love it sweet.
It also has no preservatives, so it's kind of hard to get ice vine out of the country, but I think that, you know, I'm sure there's a way you can get tuna tomorrow from, you know, Korea, so I think you can probably just, you know, ship things, but yeah, look it up. But ice vine is a wonderful treat, you know. And I know my a friend of mine that when we get together for Greek food, he has the retsina.
No.
Yep, retsina.
I can't do it. I tried it once.
It's a wine that, as the story goes, is I remember being told to me that when the Germans invaded Greece, they didn't want them to take all their wine, so they threw a bunch of tar pitch in it. So it's a wine that really tastes like chewing on a pine cone.
It tastes like pine salt, if you ask me.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, you know, there's a lot of things out there, folks, and all we do is say, you know, hey, give things a shot. But anyway, we really appreciate you tuning in to Cooking Like a Pro. Thank you for that. Thank you for joining us. And just God bless you. Enjoy the remainder of your week. And again, we appreciate you joining us here on KCNR 1460 AM, 96.5 FM. Cooking Like a Pro. We will see you next
week. The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.